From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Shake it, don't break it. Welcome to The Treatment. You can also hear this show at KCRW.com. If you saw the movie Zebrahead in 1993, you'd think the character played by Michael Rapaport would have grown up to make a documentary about A Tribe Called Quest. That character didn't, but actor Michael Rapaport did. He directed the film Beats, Rhymes, and Life, which is not only the name of the fourth Tribe album, it's the name of his movie as well. Michael, first of all, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And it's funny because we talk about this, 92 was a big year for sort of like hip-hop film. There was Zebrahead,
right.
There was Juice.
Right.
And I just remember thinking that you were part of that generation of actors, and I'm sure you've talked about this before, that first generation of actors who really absorbed hip-hop in the way they talked.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, you weren't just emulating it. You really were feeling it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, that's a good point. I grew up, you know, loving hip-hop, as a lot of people did, and I grew up in New York City in the 80s, and you know, I was exposed to it early, and it was around us. And it was around me. It was a part of my everyday life once I discovered it. If I wasn't listening to it, you were trying to find it.
And those were the days you had to really kind of work for it, because it was still kind of the de facto underground.
Exactly. You definitely had to work for it. I mean, there was no internet. It wasn't on cable. It wasn't played on MTV in its heyday in the early 80s. Shows like Video Music Box, which came along later on, you know, they didn't exist yet. And the only time they really played it was late nights on Fridays and Saturdays. You know, it definitely changed the way I look at the world. It exposed me to a lot of things. It brought me to places that I probably never would have been to. Chasing music, following the music, you know, and loving the music. It influenced me in a lot of ways.
But can you look back now on the early films you did and just sort of see just the way you stand and the way you move is different from all the other actors in the shots?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I grew up, you know, in New York City, and because of basketball and because of hip-hop, you know, I'm from Manhattan, but I wound up spending a lot of time in the Brownsville section of Brooklyn and in Harlem. And you know, hip-hop and the vernacular of it and just the attitude of it, that's just how I was. It was kind of teenage angst, rebellion, and it was just really just that's how we all talked, everybody that I grew up around. I mean, and so it definitely, you know, I was aware of it. Obviously, when I look back, I'm more aware of it. I never tried to hide or change, you know, who I am or disguise it. I'd probably be a little bit further along in my career if I kind of like, oh, that's just a character. That's just a character I'm playing. I'd be like, oh, he embodies the character so much. But, you know, Zebrahead, it's definitely, if that character, he probably would have wound up directing this documentary about A Tribe Called Quest also. So.
No, because it really feels like that to me. I just sort of thought, especially last night, I went to see the Sunshine here in Manhattan. And I just kind of thought, yeah, this is what he'd be doing right now.
That's a good point.
If he was able to get out of Detroit alive.
Right, absolutely, absolutely.
But I just found that so interesting because that to me kind of felt this thing, because if you saw hip-hop movies up until that point, there was stuff like, you know, Disorderlies and these
right.
sort of things that didn't take it seriously,
right.
or Beat Street. You saw a bunch of actors
right.
trying to live
right.
like that. And you must have felt like in some ways, just growing up, you never saw movies that reflected the kind of life you wanted to see.
Right. Well, I mean, honestly, before I really started acting, I didn't think about it. I wanted to be a basketball player. So when I realized my hoop dreams weren't coming true, I started doing stand-up comedy. And even then, I didn't think about acting until I got called in for auditions from people that saw me doing stand-up comedy. And shortly after I was doing that, it was the thing for Zebrahead. And when the casting came about for Zebrahead and I read that part, I just, like, I knew, like, that was for me. You know, I knew I had to get that part. And getting that part in that movie was produced by Oliver Stone, and then going to Sundance, it changed the course of my life. You know, and here I am now.
But, I mean, as we talk about this, it just seems to me that still hip-hop isn't really represented in the movies in real ways very often.
Yeah. It's true, but, you know, socially, it's so much a part of our everyday culture. It's so much of a part of our everyday life. You know, you see the T-Mobile commercial with the white girl sitting next to the white guy, and he's rapping, and he's really flowing, and he's good, and, you know, no one bats an eye. You know, 20 years ago, that would be, like, crazy to see that. To see a white kid rapping would be crazy, but just to sell, it would have been, like, it would have to be some sort of over-the-top joke. You know, Michelle Obama's doing the Dougie. It's because of hip-hop. It's because of the golden era of hip-hop that's how she's dancing. And, you know, and T-Mobile is selling commercials doing that. It's straight. You know, it's not like being made fun of. And, you know, it's part of popular culture now. You know, race relations, I think, has taken, you know, a step in the right direction because of hip hop. Because kids grow up listening to this, seeing, you know, black kids and emulating it, curious about it, not being so fearful of it. You know, seeing that on TV and, you know, and in sports, so much of that is influenced, you know, athletes. And
you think about basketball.
Allen Iverson, I mean, you know, and that whole... You know, kids grow up, you're seeing it, and it's not as frightening. And, you know, and if you're a parent and you kind of have that in you, your kid is going to be like, you know, like, I like Allen Iverson. I like, you know, Amari Stoudemire. These guys are cool, you know. So I think it's done a lot for not just culturally and musically, but just, you know, for relations between people.
Allen Iverson didn't help Detroit. It's The Treatment. My guest is actor turned director Michael Rapaport. His film, the documentary on A Tribe Called Quest, is Beats, Rhymes, and Life. Let me ask you, though, this. You're talking about rap not being scary, and that sort of that group of rappers that Tribe was a part of really sort of changed that. I mean, it made it a less fearsome thing because their flow was really about life. And the way Tribe produced this stuff, it was really conversational. Yeah. You just kind of fell into the rhythm of it.
Yeah, it wasn't beat you up over the head. I mean, it was definitely Afrocentric and it was definitely, like I said, conscious. It just wasn't as radical. And, you know, groups like Public Enemy, X-Clan, NWA, when you first heard that, it was like, wild, you know.
It was a clip in a movie where NWA is bursting through the Martin Luther King, I Have a Dream. So it's just like, it was really, I hate to say in your face, but it was about being as in your grill as it could possibly be.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Tribe, you know, they were conscious, they were soulful, they were, but there was a word that came on making beats, rhymes, and life was inclusive. They were for everybody. It was for everybody, but it was clearly, you know, black music and it was clearly hardcore hip hop, but there was just some sort of it factor and an intangible quality that they had that it would, they made it for everybody and everybody came and everybody liked it. It wasn't soft or corny at all, but somehow or another it crossed over because the musicality of it, I think, was just so, that's why I compare them to the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. It's like, you just, if you have a pulse, how could you not like Tribe Called Quest? How could you not like good hip hop? You know, like, you know, and Tribe Called Quest is indicative of that. Like, it's just good music, period.
I mean, you're talking about that, and for me, the Rolling Stones is a real comparison. I mean, because those drum beats, I mean, those drum samples and all those Quest records are so much about, hey, this, you just felt it right away. You know, it was really seductive.
Right. It was emotional. It was soulful. It was familiar. You know, the samples that they used, you know, Lou Reed and Stevie Wonder and Sly Stone, but the way they did it, it was just such an artistic merit to it. It wasn't lifted, you know, like they took two or three songs and mixed it all together, and you know, they really pushed the envelope for hip hop, and then they did a lot for the culture.
But it's also the shift in rap. I mean, because there was this thing, you either felt East Coast, it was like Ice-T back then, he's really like the man in those days, or NWA.
Right.
And Tribe and De La Soul and Jungle Brothers, all those groups that came out of that period, who, I don't want to say too much about jazz, but there were a lot of jazz samples that made it much more, as you were saying, musical than a lot of rap had been until that point.
I agree. And I think a lot of it was, you know, listening to their parents' record collections, and then that being the instruments, you know, and you're like, you're going to your father's record collection, and it's like, oh, there's a Johnny Lee Hooker, you know, sample, or oh, there's a, you know, all sorts of jazz of soul. It's just like it was a soulfulness to it, and then Q-Tip as a producer, because you know he did a lot of the production on the first three albums. And he did so many of these classic songs, Can I Kick It, Benita Applebaum, he was like 16, 17 years old. When you look back and you think of that, those songs were done by a teenager, it's very impressive.
The movie's very impressive, too. We're talking about Beats, Rhymes, and Life, the film by actor-turned-director Michael Rapaport, his documentary about Tribe Called Quest. And one of the things I really like about the movie, and I thought it was really cool that you did this, is that when you interview Q-Tip and Fife and Ali and Jarobi, they're all outside the way they were in all those classic videos, walking on the streets.
Right.
When did that occur to you to shoot like that?
You know, some of it was conscious. Some of it was, you know, like sometimes they'd be like, no, I don't want to shoot in my house. We got to go out of the house. We're like, okay. So, it's, you know, but a lot, you know, we definitely wanted to shoot them in Queens. They're from Queens, and I wanted that to be the backdrop of the film. And they're classic New York group, just like the Ramones are, and just like, you know, Lou Reed is, you know, Tribe Called Quest. I mean, hip hop is New York. Tribe Called Quest is Queens. And, you know, so I wanted to be in their neighborhood. So we went right to their neighborhood.
And it's fascinating, too, just in terms of the film is so basically revels in a history that you have Madlib doing the music. And as
right.
Pharrell says in the film, he's one of the sons of Quest.
Right, right. I, you know, like Madlib did the music. And, you know, there's so many people that are influenced by Tribe Called Quest. A lot of the people we interview in the film, like Pharrell, Questlove, Common. I mean, you know, one of the easier parts of making this movie was getting people to talk about A Tribe Called Quest. People were coming out of the woodworks to be in the movie when they heard about it because people are so influenced and inspired by them. And, you know, I got Madlib, who's a great producer. He's from the West Coast to do the score. But my whole criteria for the person who was going to do the score was I wanted it to be someone who's derived from Tribe. And obviously he has other influences, but his music is, you don't even have to ask him. You could just hear the influence in the music.
Well, it's interesting too, just because the title of the movie is the album that Madlib doesn't work on.
Right.
He worked on that fourth album with those
right,
guys. So I just
right.
thought, I just kind of liked that kind of back and forth that you had going
yeah.
on.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the things that you talked about in the, you know, before about like, you know, the whole native tongues contingency, like Tribe, De La, Moni Love, Queen Latifah, you know, Black Sheep and all them. There was and this is, I feel like, is gone a little bit in hip hop, unless there's money involved. You know, those groups weren't even on the same label, but they were so supportive of each other. Each one of them was on a different label, but this whole Native Tongues, you know, crew, clique, contingency, whatever you want to call it, they were working together, supporting each other, rhyming on each other's albums, you know, just hanging out.
It's like each joint was an all-star joint.
Yeah, and it was a community, and it was really just an innocence, like, you know, we're all down for each other.
It was like a commune.
Exactly, exactly. And it was a great, great time in hip-hop. I mean, in Native Tongues, that movement is like a pillar of hip-hop. And, you know, people, you know, have been asking me a lot, like, what do you think's changed? I mean, that sort of energy has changed. Everything now is like, if you know, we're on the same label. And then once you get off that label, then it's F you. And you know, but these people were just doing it because they loved it. And I think the essence of hip-hop is about that.
It's funny, too, because, you know, I think about all those groups that sort of came in the wake of that, like Arrested Development,
right.
all those guys. You know, they weren't able to quite put that whole commune vibe together.
Because, right.
like you were saying, there was a real innocence about that.
Yeah.
You hear Bonita Applebaum, you just
yeah.
kind of go, you remember exactly where you were the first time it dropped, the first time it... And there's something really sunny about all that music.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And like I said, I think that... The thing about hip-hop at the time is that it was evolving day to day.
But it was until that point, though, it was a really dark idiom.
Yeah. Wait, what do you mean? What do you mean?
I mean, basically, it was really kind of combative. It was really aggressive,
right?
You know?
It was definitely aggressive. Yeah, and it was, you know, and the sexuality was overt, and it was like, you know, over-sexualized, and, you know, and it started to get in, you know, I got this, I got that. And Tribe definitely kind of brought it back to, I think, like a playfulness. And they grew up, you know, as kids listening and idolizing Run DMC and, you know, these groups that just had this, there was just this positive vibe about it.
It was almost like they kind of like they weren't influenced by Run DMC as much as it was going back to the Sugar Hill Gang.
Right.
They had that same kind of innocence.
Right. It, absolutely. There was definitely an innocence. And I think there was an honesty. I think Tribe Called Quest, you know, they didn't talk about, you know, being with 900 women. They talked about Bonita Applebaum and wanting to get close to her and wanting to hug her. And, you know, she's got a nice derriere. You know what I mean? It wasn't this fantasy thing. They were very like, I think the thing that's why a lot of people were attracted to Tribe because you felt like you knew them. They were like regular guys, you know, who rode the train and were chasing girls.
Who walked the streets and talked about what they liked.
Exactly, exactly. And like that first album was, to me, was very adolescent. That first album, People's Instinct to Travel, is like, you know, if you listen to that album, it's kind of like walking around a high school. And there's a conversation about a girl, there's a conversation about, you know, date rape, there's a conversation about, you know, being conscious, but it's all done in a way that's just very sort of easy to swallow.
We'll take a break. It is Fat. I'm talking to Michael Rappaport about his movie as director. It's Beats, Rhymes, and Life. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. There's more to come.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back to The Treatment. You can also hear the show at kcrw.com. I'm talking with an actor, Michael Rapaport, who's been directed by people from, let's see, Woody Allen to Spike Lee to Tony Scott, and he's now directing himself, made the documentary Beats, Rhymes, and Life about the Tribe Called Quest. I was just wondering, because you were saying, you told me a number of times, this film took a long time to make. Mm-hmm. Did you know it was going to end up being as personal a document as it turned out to be? Because it really is as much about you as it is about that world and that time.
I didn't know it was going to be as personal as it turned out. That's just the happenstance of filmmaking. You know, in the beginning, I really thought it was going to be more concert-driven and more about the music. I didn't think that the group... first of all, I didn't realize that the group, their relationships were as complicated as they sort of revealed in the movie, and they were revealed to me.
Even though Five kind of teed off on Tip and...
Yeah, but that was right away. Like, I mean, as soon as I started shooting... I was exposed to it, but before that, I didn't know that.
But even on his album, The Validation, he kind of takes off on Q-Tip for being too commercial. And
their relationship is of brothers. You know, they have known each other since they were like 2 or 3 years old.
Yeah, you showed a picture of them in school together,
exactly,
elementary school.
Exactly. And, you know, if you are that close with somebody and they're married to this thing called A Tribe Called Quest, and there's no getting around it, because people like me sniff around and want to do documentaries, and promoters want to do shows, and they have an album, you know, left on their contract, and as great and as prolific as they've all been away from Tribe Called Quest is the thing that is the biggest moneymaker, and it's the thing that's been the most significant, and there's a burden to that. And being around the same person, you know, in a business relationship that's also personal for 30 something years, there's a burden to that. And there's no breaking up. And you know, the fans won't let them. And so their relationship is intense. And like I said, I didn't think the film was going to be as interpersonal. I'm glad it turned out that way, because...
No, it's that, but it's also, it's really, there's a lot of you in it. I mean, there's heart and soul of you in this film.
Yeah.
And you can almost feel, it's almost charted based on your emotional reaction to this. We can feel a surprise that you feel when you see this tension between these guys. And that scene when Jarobi's talking about Fife, and the tears just start to roll.
Yeah.
We can sort of feel you in the movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was trying, man. I was always curious about their dynamic. And also, they always felt like people who I knew. Like, I have friends, you know, that I grew up with. They remind me of them. And their relationship, the dysfunction of it at times, is something I can relate to. And in dealing with that as a director, you know, I can relate to that. I can't relate to the genius of Q-Tip. And I can't relate to the sort of, you know, freestyling, you know, I could just do this and I'm really good at it without really showing any effort that Fife has. But I could relate to the interpersonal relationships, and I gravitated towards that while we were shooting. And I felt like it would separate the movie from just this is how we did it concert film, which is not what I wanted to make. And I'm just so glad that it's taken, that it took those turns, and that the guys were as open and honest with me while we were shooting, because I feel like if we hadn't done that, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you. The movie wouldn't come out in theaters. I don't even think the movie would have been at Sundance. I think it would have been, you know, straight to DVD release. You
really?
Know, absolutely. If the movie didn't have the emotional quality to it, none of this would have happened. Absolutely.
Because I just feel as a thing, people want to know about those guys.
Yes.
Because, you know, you think about it, for the last 10 years, they've been breaking up. I remember sitting in at the second... basically the second Rock the Bell show, just
yep.
after ODB died.
Yeah.
And it was like, you saw that first 20 minutes, they just basically like were freestyling about him. And you
yeah.
just kind of felt, oh my God, these guys are a power. And
yeah.
then it's like, if that song was over, they weren't getting along again.
Yeah.
As soon as that song was over.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but I think all that stuff and all the music stuff can only take you so far as far as telling a film. I think, like, as far as an audience, you know, it would have been strictly for Tribe fans. The thing that's been so exciting about the response from the movie is that people have had an emotional response to the movie. And that's because you're watching something that you can relate to. Everybody can relate to, you know, relationships, you know, going off course or you know, there, you know, dysfunction in them or fractured relationships. Everybody's been through it, whether it's your best friend, your father, your brother, your husband, your wife. Everybody can relate to that. And watching guys that you love and admire that you really didn't think, because it's Tribe and the music is so positive, seeing them like that, I think, is a surprise. And some of the Tribe Called Quest fans, like, they've said to me, I don't want to see that. I'm like, but that's the reality of it. They're just like every other group. You know, 99% of the groups have broken up. You know, the Rolling Stones are the ones, probably the only ones who never broke up. The Beatles broke up, NSYNC broke up, Destiny's Child broke up. It happens all the time. There's no crime in it. But when it happens, if you're a fan, like my mother told me when the Beatles broke up, she, you know, sobbed. You know, I didn't sob when Tribe broke up, but I remember being at their last show in 1998, and I said in the audience, I said, I felt like my parents are getting divorced. You know, they meant that much to the fans, and you just never expected it.
Well, the man who's almost making me cry sitting across from me is Michael Rapaport. His new film as director is Beats, Rhymes, and Life, the film on basically the creative and psychological life of the Tribe Called Quest.
Yeah.
And it's funny that, you know, the album that doesn't sort of get as much talk about is the one that's the title of the film. And
yeah.
I also felt like that was the one that kind of was the end of them.
Yeah.
Because that's when all the outsiders came in. It didn't feel as much like a Tribe record.
Yeah.
To me, that was when it felt like, well, this is kind of over.
Yeah. And it was. And then they talked about it, like that changing. And, you know, a lot of
things. You really concentrate on those first three albums,
yep,
which really informed the way everybody feels about them.
Yep, absolutely.
And I was wondering why you sort of didn't concentrate on that fourth
because
so
the fourth
much.
Album is like we, you know, when we got to the time of when I was, you know, chronicling, you know, the group, you know, Beats, Rhymes, Life, that's when they talk about the chemistry being off. J Dilla came in. Consequence came into the group. You know, a lot of stuff with the business of music and hip hop was changing because we touched on this in a little bit in the film, but like the samples, you know, the cat was out of the bag, so you couldn't just sample. It wasn't like the kids had run of the playground, you know, where they could just sample from everything. You'd have to pay, and the budgets were going up. So, you know, these, you know, musicians were forced to be brought in, or they were compromising, not compromising, just changing the way they were making music. You could hear it. And the fact that they brought in other people, and, you know, Q-Tip talks about it. They were trying to, you know, just trying to flip it, trying to change it, which you could respect. You don't, you know, the thing I respect a lot about Q-Tip as an artist, he has that classic thing where he's not going backwards. He doesn't want to duplicate People's Instinct. He doesn't want to duplicate the Low End Theory. He wants to keep trying things. And I love that about him. But, you know, you want things to, it's just like when Miles Davis, he went electric and people flipped out. And then he went in like the crazier direction. And people, you know, after he left Bebop, it's like Tip has that, you know, Miles Davis mentality, like I'm going forward. But sometimes it's hard to accept that, especially in hip hop.
Because it's fascinating, too, about that particular album is that one that felt to me where you had a bunch of outsiders like J Dilla, who
yep,
basically came on board around the time of Midnight Marauders,
yep,
trying to make their version of a Tribe Called Quest record.
Right, right.
Instead of being Tribe themselves.
Right. Things change. And then by the time they made the fifth album, The Love Movement,
you make a very big point about that.
Right. We make a big point of it because Fife says a great thing about The Love Movement. He says it should have been called The Last Movement, which is, it's funny, but it's funny and sad, which is one of the great things about Fife in the movie, because a few times in the movie, in the most emotional times, he's able to get laughs out of the audience and sort of break you out of it, because he, you know, it's that thing when you're arguing with somebody and in your most intense, you could wind up, you know, saying things that could crack you up. And he does that a lot. And he talked about The Love Movement being, you know, that was the end. And they knew it was going to be the end. And it was publicized as their last album. And their last shows were publicized as the last shows. And that was it. And it was the end of an era for Tribe Called Quest. And they haven't recorded since then, which is crazy, you know, because they get offers all the time. And like I said, at the end of the film, they still have one album left on their original deal from Sony, which is something that I think has caused them not to use it.
That's part of the problem, too. And then that last record, there was just, wait a second, we're not here to keep Jive alive. What about us?
Right. And also, like, yeah, we signed this when we were 17. You know, we were a big group now. So that was definitely something that, you know, like they were conscious of. And, you know, it wasn't just them not getting along. It was a lot of things. The business had changed. And, you know, there's no crime in wanting to go solo. There's no crime in wanting to explore other things. It's people like me. It's the fans that just want everything to be the same. So it wasn't just them not getting along. It was a few different things. And, you know, it's happened to the greatest of groups. You know, there's only a few that have stayed the whole time. You know, Rolling Stones being one of them. De La Soul and Hip Hop is another one. But other than that, it's not that many.
Yeah, at least nobody's fighting over the name of Tribe Called Quest yet.
Exactly, exactly.
That's what scares me. It's The Treatment, my guess, is actor-turned-director Michael Rapaport, his new film, first film, debut film as a director, is the Beats, Rhymes, and Life. Who was the first of the group you showed it to?
The first person I actually showed it to all of them separately, but at the same, like within like a 2-day period.
Okay, okay.
Because of that, you know, because, you know, the group is broken up. And they,
but like I said, it feels like they've been breaking for the last 10 years. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah,
I mean,
but there's not like I go, okay, guys, and they're like, okay, we're gonna go to Q-Tip's house and watch the movie. It's not like that. You know, I dealt with them as individuals, and I showed them the movie individually, like in like a 36-hour period. I wanted them to all see it as close at the same time. So, and you know, they all had different opinions about it. They all had different thoughts about it. They all. Which made it challenging. They all had different, you know, well, you know, that's not right. And he's saying this and I never heard him say that. And, you know, and first seeing it was an emotional experience for them. Each one of them was emotional about it. You know, some good, some bad, but it was emotional. But you know, I just tried to hear every one of them out, you know.
Did you make changes based on what they said about it?
Some of them were, but not necessarily like change that because I don't like it. You know, like Q-Tip is really smart, and some of his changes and thoughts, it wasn't changes, notes, you know, like, oh, we're missing this, we don't talk about that, or connecting dots. Like, it gave me some perspective. Some of it I didn't agree with. You know, Fife was, you know, like each one of them had a different point of view. And you know, and then like certain stuff that was more like sensitive, you know, in regards to the group, you know, like I would talk, like I remember I had a conversation with Q-Tip and Ali Shaheed Muhammad, watching, you know, the film together, and they were talking about, they started a conversation about when the group broke up. It was like a 15-minute sidebar conversation, and there was an intense conversation between the two of them, and I didn't say anything. We weren't filming, and afterwards I said, have you guys ever talked about that? And they were like, nah, we never did talk about that. And I was like, well, if nothing else comes from this movie, at least you kind of cleared the air about this. So, you know, like, you know, when one guy's telling me one thing and the other guy's telling me another thing, it was great that I had them together because I was like, yo, you guys are telling me two totally different things. And then you're saying, you know, you need to get it right. I'm like, nah, because what I shot is your version and what I shot is your version. So don't, you know, I'm just the messenger. You know what I mean? You know, you know, so that stuff was, it was hard. It was challenging. It was definitely challenging. But, you know, the movie that I got to release is the movie that I wanted to release. And I think that, you know, I never wanted to make anything that was too informative. I think if you go too far and it's over detailed and it's you
know, it doesn't have an emotional life.
It has to have an emotional life.
If it's too detailed, it does not have an emotional
right,
life.
Right. And you get so it's just like figuring that out. Like because if it's too, you know, they have a tough relationship. But if I put all that in the movie, it might be more, you know, scandalous. And it might make, you know, be more, but it doesn't mean to make it a better movie. You know, you don't have to put every single fight, every kind of discrepancy that goes on. You just want to get a feeling, you know, understanding of it. And that was something that I learned in the editing room and, you know, and tried to balance out because also I wasn't there to pick sides. You know, I wasn't like Fife is right, Q-Tip's wrong or vice versa or any kind of combination of that. Like I was never there to judge them. And I didn't judge them. I had no, you know, who am I to judge? I'm no day at the beach myself, but like, and I had no preconceived notions of them as people outside of being musicians. So when it came to that stuff in the editing room, I was really sensitive of it, conscious of it, and also conscious of the fact that, you know, if somebody was doing a documentary about me, how would I want to be portrayed in an honest way, but not taking it too far. So all those things were challenges in the editing room.
I got to ask you to come back at some point. Just talk about anything. It's so good to have you here finally.
Thank
after
you.
Meeting you and seeing the film The Sundance. You did a great job. It's an ill joint.
Thank you, Elvis.
My guest is actor-turned-director Michael Rapaport. His documentary debut, his directing debut, was Beats, Rhymes, and Life. Our recording engineer, Argo Studios in New York, is Paul West. The show is edited and mixed by J.C. Swadek. I left my wallet in El Segundo. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.